I'm here to show the world. I'm here to show the world.
Come on.
Talk about an interesting feud with a great story. Dolph Ziggler is going to be facing Otis. And Mandy Rose's heart is on the line. Who's going to win Mandy in the end?
Let's welcome in. That's a good question for our next guest. Dirk, would you like to respond?
I have no insight on that question.
Have you ever been to a professional wrestling match or an event?
No, I have not. I watched them a lot growing up. And then it sort of phased out of it, and must have been in the Texas tornado era or something like that.
Hey, last week when you were on, it was fantastic by you and your colleagues on a day in Omaha that ran in the World Herald on Sunday. And now that we're 23 days without sports and we're into this and it's impacting our community, and you're listening to stories, you're writing stories, you learned anything new about this community that you didn't know 3 weeks ago?
Good question. I think that, first of all, it's funny how we're all sort of blending into, half news commentators, half sports commentators at this point. I feel for you guys who have to be especially creative in the way that you sort of evaluate the sports landscape right now. But I think one thing that has become very apparent to me is just how when you're talking about a city of 750,000 or a million people, I mean, just how many pieces of the machine are moving at the same time at any given moment, and how this whole thing has just stopped so many pieces of that machine. You know, it's everything from the fast food industry to factories to, you know, obviously the sports landscape to, schools to, it affects shelters, it affects hospitals. I mean, it's just, this is a giant community that, granted, it's not as big as Kansas City or New York City or something like that, but you run into something like this, and it's funny because I always assumed that it would be sort of if something like this happened, it would be something computer generated. It would be an electrical grid issue or something like that, that just kind of halted our community and our country. And I didn't expect the disease, it's one of these things that affects almost every single person in the city of Omaha and in the state of Nebraska beyond that. And you just can't identify very many things where that would be the case. It's just sort of, it's devastating, obviously, but it's also kind of awe-inspiring how many people have been touched by this in so many different ways.
And little things matter. I mean, just the you go to the grocery store and that 18-year-old young high school boy or girl is, you know, checking you out and you say thank you. I mean, it's just the little things matter, but it just shows you how good this community is.
And let me try to answer your question a little bit better than I did, because I think that, I mean, I don't want to downplay what we've already endured here, especially economically, but this is obviously going to get a lot worse here locally throughout the course of April. And I think, you know, we're going to see the community change and sort of pick each other up in ways that even to this point we haven't seen. I mean, I think it's really cool that, you know, we see people lifting up hospital workers, and we see people grocery shopping and, you know, donating blood and food to food banks and all that stuff. That's fantastic. But I have a feeling that we're just on the cusp of that, because as this gets more difficult throughout the course of April, I think people's, you know, unselfishness and love for their city is going to kick in even more, and you're going to see even more creative ways for people to lift each other up.
On the sports side, I know I'm not a scientist, you're not a scientist, but we all ask this question every day as it pertains to sports. And I've said all day, it's easy to ask the question, but to have a response, you can say, I don't know. But in your gut, as you follow this, you think we're further away from watching games than we want to admit?
Oh, especially the games that we care about most. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a scenario in which, Nebraska and the country as a whole can host certain events. I mean, I think you could have golf tournaments. I think you could, maybe even have soccer matches or baseball games. But if we're talking football, for instance, I mean, I'm worried that, this might go on into a year from now. We're having the same conversation. I mean, I would imagine there's going to be some medical advancements in terms of, medicine that treats this virus. But just from what we know right now, the idea of having 100,000 people in a stadium, that might seem like that might be a very antiquated idea for the foreseeable future. And that's really scary when you think about the things that the sporting events that we really love most, and the joy and the energy of being in a building or being in a stadium where people are almost on each other's laps. Yeah. And it's funny because not funny. It's interesting because we always thought about the danger of a situation like that in terms of a terrorist attack, right? I mean, it's a bomb going off or something like that. And yet here we are, and it might be just as dangerous in terms of an infectious disease to put that many people in the same place. So I think you're right. I mean, Jamie Pollard, mentioned, he talked about it at length with the media yesterday, and even used the phrase ice age for what we might be going into. And I think there's a real danger of that. And I just worry, obviously I worry about the economic effects and what it does to people's pocketbooks and their jobs. But I also worry just about what it does for people's, for their spirits. Mm-hmm. Because in a place like this, those environments, those events are such a source of joy that it's hard to consider a calendar where we don't have that stuff.
What does college athletics look like when we do get back into stadiums and having games and whatever this new normal would be? What do you think it does to college athletics as a whole?
Well, we talked about this a little bit last week. I do think it's going to eliminate, like a lot of things, small businesses and several industries. I think it's going to eliminate, the ones that weren't doing very well in the first place. Mm-hmm. So, several football programs that don't come back, or several athletic departments that have to cut a whole bunch of stuff, or maybe they even drop to Division II or Division III because they just don't have the resources to hack it. But I think as we get closer to having real events, I would imagine that you're going to see, very sparse crowds at first. If we can have a college football game on a Saturday, maybe we allow 15,000 people in the stadium instead of 75,000. I think that's something to consider. But the other part of this, and this may be where you were going with it, but I do think we're just going to see a love affair with sports that probably is even more, is even more visceral than it ever was, because people, they just miss this stuff. I miss it. You miss it. And I think as time goes on, it's going to get even more difficult, where people, when it does come back, people are going to appreciate it even more. And I'm that doesn't mean that we will idolize it like we once did, because I think we'll recognize that there are more important things. But that distraction and that sort of source of community enthusiasm, I would imagine, will not be taken for granted like it once was.
So let's talk about, last night was a good sports night. You had USC and Texas were being replayed. if you're on Facebook, the Nebraska Rice game from the Super Regional was being replayed. But the USC Texas game, where if you were watching it with you know, one of your young children, you had to explain to them that is a huddle. They are huddling up before the snap of the ball. But we got a couple of people today when we were talking about it earlier, Dirk. They said, "Gosh, I love college football, but I really liked college football 15 years ago than I do today because of the way the game was played. There was more fullbacks.
Interesting.
There was no, you know, there was no such thing as targeting back then. I mean, guys were getting crushed. And I was thinking, are there other sports that we followed for a long time that you could make the case that, yeah, 10, 15 years ago, I kind of liked the product better than I like it now, even though most of the athletes are bigger, stronger, faster?"
For sure. I think I did this several years ago on a Mad Chatter blog where I tried to identify like the 5-year peak of every sport. And, you know, it's maybe something that your listeners could do at some point, but you know, boxing, it was the early 80s. You know, the NFL, I don't recall exactly. The NFL is harder to pinpoint because I think there are not very many lags in the NFL history. Even when the play changed, you know, when the style of play changed, you know, I think the games have maintained their excitement. College basketball, I think, was never better than from about 1988 to 1993. In fact, I'm watching a 1993 Indiana Michigan game on YouTube right now with the Fab Five in their sophomore years. I was looking for something else on YouTube and somehow I stumbled onto this. But I think it's a fun discussion to have. You know, which sports have sort of reached the peak and they're going the other way, and some obviously have. Baseball would be a fun one. You know, I think baseball, I think you'd probably have a lot of people that said that it peaked back in the 60s. I think, you know, I would probably, it was pretty darn good in the late 80s. Some of this is just dependent on our childhood.
Yep.
Too. You know, it's like musical taste. You know, you always think the best era of music was what you were listening to when
Absolutely.
You were 15, 18 years old. So I think that's a part of it too, but I there probably aren't very many sports that are at their peak right now. Which sport would be at its peak right now? Never better.
I was going to say college.
Maybe something.
I was going to say college football, but I'm looking at the teams. I mean, it's basically the same 5-6 teams every year. The NBA is pretty good right now. Yes. I want to go back to something though that I agree with.
You're going to get some Celtics and Lakers fans or even Bulls fans calling you on that one though.
Because there's more depth. You know, instead of just a few super teams, it seems like every team has one or two superstars.
Yeah, it's the NBA is pretty good right now. I mean, people that don't like the three-point shot really gripe a lot about the NBA, and I can certainly understand that. But the way that they've developed depth in the league and individual stars and sort of drama amongst those individual stars is something that a lot of leagues would envy right now.
Let me go back. I college basketball in the time frame that you said, which is, you know, basically Danny Manning through the UNLV teams, you know, we have the ability to watch more live sporting events and get to know more teams than we ever have. But back then, even though there was a lot of stuff on TV, it wasn't like every single game was on TV. It seemed like you had more characters that were in the game, especially in college basketball. The Danny Manning and the Miracles seemed like they were bigger than life. That whole UNLV team was amazing. That every game felt like a huge, huge game in that sport. I like that time period you picked in college basketball because that was really, really good because you had the Danny Manning and the Miracles, you had UNLV, and then you also had the downfall of UNLV all in that same time period and the rise of the Fab Five.
Well, you had the rise of the Fab Five. You had really Duke at its peak, which, you know, created a lot of people who loved Duke, and obviously a lot of people who hated Duke. But beyond that, it was an era where, you know, it was sort of reaching the masses through cable TV and ESPN specifically. I mean, that was really the era when ESPN was booming. And at the same time, it was the 3-point shot and the shot clock, which were really, really important components, I think, of college basketball's improvement during that era. And the other part of this is it was still sort of small enough where the coaches were real characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it was Billy Tubbs and Norm Stewart and Bob Knight, and you just go down the list. I mean, Lou Carnesecca and Raleigh Massimino and Jim Valvano, and I mean, it's just there were 40 of those guys who were just completely different than everybody else. And I think it was just this perfect intersection point where the game was getting bigger and better, and yet had not abandoned sort of its charm. And that was, you know, coincidentally, that's sort of the era that I fell in love with college basketball. And the other part of this is that, you know, cable TV was obviously a big source of enthusiasm, but there weren't so many games on where it became saturated.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a really important part of it too, where, you know, you'd get 12 games on a week. And those 12 games, you could pretty much guarantee they were going to be big games. You didn't just flip through the channels and have to watch a DePaul Marquette game on a Wednesday night. You know, it was Indiana Michigan, and it was Kentucky Arkansas, and it was Oklahoma Kansas, and it was one big game after another. And I think it preserved a little bit of mystery when you didn't have to watch the bad teams.
And Big Monday was a big deal when you get Big East basketball followed up by Big 8/Big 12.
Yep. Georgetown, Syracuse, Kansas, Missouri. That's a pretty good doubleheader on a Monday night.
Yeah, that was. I like that pick. I might have to go down the rabbit hole of the late 80s, early 90s with you as well. Hey, Dirk, we appreciate it. Have a good weekend. Be safe with the family.
Okay, you too. Take care.
That's Dirk Chatelain from the World Herald. Joins us every Friday. And Tark, Rise of Coach K, the Fab Five. Mm-hmm. Final Fours that were played in NBA arenas. And then they shifted domes and they never came back. I mean, we had a Final Four in Kemper Arena in Kansas City. Kemper Arena. And we were going to have a Final Four this weekend at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. I'll be back next year. Well, instead, you can watch old Final Four games on television, wherever you can find them.
Or WrestleMania.
Yes. Brian Alvarez, who covers the sport for the Wrestling Observer, has a lot of background. He'll join us next. We've gone double barrel wrestling here. George's day. This has been George's day. He beat me in the showcase showdown. We're tied up at 3 apiece. I'm losing money on The Price is Right. By the way, the Adam Sandler, that is the director and producer of The Price is Right, is not related.
Oh, really?
It is a different Adam Sandler. I'm going to guess that there's not a day goes by that guy doesn't, someone doesn't ask. If he calls someone and says, I'd like to speak to Bob. Can I tell him who's calling? Adam Sandler. Oh, just a moment, Bob. I'll get Bob in just a moment. And then they get on the phone and it's Adam Sandler from The Price is Right.
Mm.
Yes. Also, we'll get the latest on what's going on and how we're attacking COVID-19. Special guest from UNMC will join us before we are done at 2, and we're off to the weekend, where you'll grab a date with your PlayStation, you'll scream at teenagers, and you'll drink lots of beverages.
And watch WrestleMania.
What do you... Man, you got a bounce back from the pay-per-view buys?
I should.
It's the Gary Sharp Show with George on 1620 The Zone.